Eric Burden and the Animals are here today for a live session of older Animal songs, plus music from his new album called Soul of a Man, on which he goes back to his blues roots for a surprising selection of songs. The Animals were there at the heart of the British invasion, but with a bit more grit than others. We got to get out of this place, House of the Rising Sun, It's My Life. They had a string of hits, and then Eric went on to more with War and Spill the Wine. Things start off with one of the Animals' earliest hits. Here's a live version of Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood.
We're going to start off with a song that I learned from Nina Simone many years ago. And features Eric McFadden on guitar. He's going to do this Espanol opus at the front.
Sometimes you see that I, Lord knows, I get mad. Don't you know no one alive, no one alive can always be an angel? If everything goes wrong, time to time, you might see somebody.
Everybody's got problems, I got more. long you stood beside me.
I still feel your fingertips upon my forehead, begging me to stay, don't run away, yeah. Stay beside me, baby. I'm just a soul with intentions of good. Oh, Lord, don't let me be misunderstood. No, 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 no. I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, don't let me be misunderstood. Let me drown in my own tears. Don't let me be misunderstood. All right, girl. Don't let me down. Because I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you.
Thank you very much. Here's a song was a big hit for the Animals in the 60s. We gotta get out of here, baby. There's always been a place in everybody's life where they need to exit immediately. Keep this song in mind when those times come upon you. In the sturdy old part of the city, the sun refused to shine. People tell me there ain't no use in trying. No, no, no. My little girl, you're so young and pretty. One thing I know for sure, you'll be dead before your time is due. Hey! better wait on it over.
Eric Burden and the Animals playing live today on the World Cafe. And Eric, the hair is standing up in the back of my neck. I think I speak for our audience today. That's fantastic. And I'm not easily impressed, Mr. Wow. Those two songs, I imagine, came to you in very different ways. That was originally Brill Building writers, right? Barry Mann?
Brill Building in New York came through the mail.
Really?
To our producer and...
It's just so perfect for you. I mean, it's just. And the other song you learned from Nina Simone's recordings.
Yeah, I first heard it by Nina Simone, and I was in New York after it had been a hit record for us in England, and she was at the Hunter College in New York, and Linda McCartney became. Linda Eastman at the time. She took me backstage to meet Nina.
Hmm.
It was pretty scary.
I would think so.
Yeah, and we became the best of enemies from that point on.
But you really did become friends, though. You sent her part of your diary and stuff, I heard, and she had that at one point in her life. And
yeah, I had this diary that I was making notes in and newspaper cuttings and... She asked to borrow it, and she kept it for like 2 years. I thought, I'm never going to see you again. And then she returned it, and she said, you know what you are? I figured it out. You're a musical journalist. And that's what you should pursue. And I went on to do things like Monterey, San Francisco Nights.
Sky Pilot,
yeah. Which for me were off the pages of the newspapers at the time.
Now, I knew you and Jimi Hendrix were running buddies. Now, did you meet when you were here, or did you meet when you came to England?
I went on a mental sojourn to try and figure out when was the first time I ever met Jimmy. And I was in Florida just recently, and I met a guy who was, in the 60s, was the manager of the theater where the Animals were topping the bill with support from Little Richard and Chuck Berry and Dionne Warwick and the Shirelles. And it was scary, you know, to think that we were going to be topping the bill, you know, against these people that we hero worshipped all our lives. And there was one of these huge elevators backstage, which took equipment up and down from the dressing room level to the floor level. And an argument ensued in the elevator because Little Richard had gone overtime. And this guy who I met in Florida was telling me that he had to lay the law down to Little Richard and saying, Richard, if you go over just 5 minutes during the next set, you're cutting into the Animals' time, and we're going to have to report you to the union because they're going to shut us down, and they're going to fine us $15,000. And Little Richard went off into one of his famous triads. You know, I'm Little Richard, don't you talk to me that way. And there was this little black guy running around with a towel and trying to cool him down. And he said, Richard, it's okay. He'd be cool, man. It's all right. And that was Jimi Hendrix, who was playing guitar for him at the time. The argument was settled by a tall black New York cop who stepped forward, opened his winter jacket, and displayed his .38 revolver and said, if you don't shut up, I'm going to put a hole between your eyes. And somebody was like, okay. Anyway, it was the first time I met Jimmy. And the next time I met him was in a mutual friend of ours' house, Zoot Money, well-known English musician. And Chaz Chandler had brought him there to introduce him to London with for the event that he would be surrounded by musicians and like-minded folks. And that's the way he was introduced to the UK.
And I would think you two would have totally like minds on a lot of things.
Well, I had an apartment in the West End of London, which was as West End as you could get. It was like just a stone's throw away from the Royal Palace. And I had a great stereo system. And so people would come by, and Jimmy would be one of them. And we'd just avoid the press, avoid the fans, and kick back and discuss horticulture and listen to music.
Eric Burden. There's more with Eric Burden as we talk about his new album, Soul of a Man, and find out what his hit with War, Spill the Wine, was really about when we get back here to the World Cafe. You can now receive World Cafe interviews as a podcast. That's an audio file delivered to your computer or MP3 audio player. Visit your favorite podcast directory or npr.org and click on NPR Podcasts to learn how to subscribe. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame member Eric Burdon is our guest today. He has a new solo album called Soul of a Man, which is a blues album, and I asked him about how he chose the songs and what their origins were.
Well, when we decided to do a blues album, well, we were in the process of making another studio album with the same crew, producer, Tony Brown-Eggle, and many great players. I said, yeah, why don't we do what the people are asking for? What are they asking for? Well, they all want a blues album. Okay, so let's go for it. And I said, we'll divide up the workload. You go for the current new stuff that's coming to you via various writers. And I'll do some research and go back as far as I can and come up with songs that we can alter slightly and make them relevant for today.
Well, the title song, Soul of a Man, is great, but then there's a tune in here. I think it's a Red Cross Store. It's a Mississippi Fred McDowell tune?
Yeah. Yeah, it was written by Mississippi Fred McDowell in about, I think, 1929 or 1930. It's that, you know, it's history.
And it's not entirely inappropriate today.
Absolutely. It's history that's happening right now as we speak.
We should let people hear it. This is our Red Cross Store.
Yeah. We'll be right back.
rhinestone.
Eric Burden and the Animals are playing live today. Live on stage at World Cafe Live. And can we go back to talk a little bit about Newcastle in the early days a little bit? Explain to people here in the U.S. what it means to be a Geordie, what it means to be from Newcastle. What's the myth of it and what's the reality of it?
Drunk. We loved our hometown football team. In fact, the whole of England does. Whether we're in the first league or the third division, it's still like, oh, man, we hope Newcastle makes it next time around. Yeah. And it was a town with lots of clubs, fortunately, for a young guy like me. There was like four folk clubs, three jazz clubs. It was a great movie theater where we could see all those great Bridget Bardot epics.
And was the love of blues unusual in Newcastle, or was it seemed to be all over the North of England at that point?
Well, we thought we were the only people in the world that had discovered this new art outlet. And I was serious about it, man. I remember like cutting open my finger and writing "Blues in Blood." That's pretty crazy. And but then as I traveled, went to Paris and London on my way to Paris and London on the way back, I met Alexis Corner, Chris Barber and people like that. And I realized that all over the world, as far afield as the communist countries like Poland and places like that, there was this love of either traditional New Orleans jazz or blues and jazz. And it was so strong. And at its peak, it was like a secret, unspoken word that summed up a worldwide youth peace movement to the point of where most governments thought it was a communist plot. But it was just a bunch of young guys and girls trying to have fun.
Now, when the British invasion happened and you came to the U.S., was that your first time in the U.S. or had you been before?
No, my first time in the U.S. was 1964. Mm-hmm. I was about to go there in the Merchant Navy, and then all of a sudden I found myself in the Animals, and I came to the States with the red carpet treatment instead of sliding in through the back door. You know, it was all ridiculous.
How did you take advantage of it, though, in terms of your interests?
Well, because every time I made a stop, I would head for the black side of town. I spent more time up in the Apollo in Harlem and made good friends with Honey Coles, who was the manager of the joint, and he gave me an open backstage pass, and I was always hanging out there. I met B.B. King, Rufus Thomas. I found the place where Malcolm X had been holed up across the street in the St. Teresa Hotel. I bought a Malcolm X album of his speeches, you know, and I could quote these speeches off the top of my head. You know, people thought I was crazy. You know, who is this little white dude, you know, sprouting all this black anger, you know? But I did have black anger, you know? I mean, like, it's easy to explain when your grandfather came home from work at night and he was black from working in the coal mines. But, you know, fortunately, we could wash it off. And I fell in love with an African girl in my hometown. Ray Charles's record, What I Say, was heard all over the world. Mm-hmm. And those lyrics, you know, I see the girl with a red dress on, in Birdland all night long. I walked into a club and there was this black girl, beautiful black girl, with a red dress on. It was like a screenplay that had been written for me. And there was no turning back from that point on, you know.
And was there a special lure to California when you finally got there? Because you've been there a lot.
Well, California was a lot different. It was white for a start. The cops were awesome, forced to be to deal with. It was different. I mean, but I could breathe actually for the first time in my life. Growing up in Newcastle had made me asthmatic, and when I got to the dry West Coast weather, I was like, wow, I can breathe. And wow, look at those palm trees moving in the wind, you know. And then, you know, a lot of people have told me, there's nothing going on in L.A. It's just a place where they make movies. But in actual fact, a lot of people in the jazz and blues world, like myself, had moved there to escape the tough times in places like Detroit and New York and down south, you know. So if you look at blues, I mean, you can follow the history of the movement of people. And a lot of them, like me, washed up on the West Coast.
Well, you ended up working with Jimmy Witherspoon, and wasn't he based, yeah, there at one point?
Yeah, Jimmy Witherspoon, Ray Charles, many luminaries that I can't come up with their names right now. But and Witherspoon took me to on gigs to prisons, to work the prisoners, and I got probably the highlight of my little dream world was entering the main yard in San Quentin with Jimmy Witherspoon, Curtis Mayfield, Muhammad Ali, and his wife. And that was my introduction to America. Wow.
And another introduction of yours in Los Angeles was you and Lee Oscar getting together with the band that became War.
Yeah.
And was that you actually looking for a band to play with at the time? How did that come about?
Well, I'd gone through like three generations of the Animals bands, and it was really physically tearing, and it became mentally devastating when we found out there was no pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. So I needed help, and instead of going to a psychiatrist, I went to the Actor Studio for a year in Los Angeles, and that was a wonderful experience. And I drove down to Guatemala from California. I went down, hung out in Mexico for a year. That was really a great period in my life. And then I was grabbed, sort of literally grabbed, because these entrepreneurs said, you know, what are you doing in the Actor Studio? You're just wasting your time. You know, if you want to be successful, you got to capitalize on what you've already got. And you're the white kid with the black voice, so what could be better than getting involved with a black band? And I thought, oh, that makes sense. You know? And we cruised the clubs in L.A. area, and we found a band called The Night Shift. It was a massive show band with baritone sax, tenor sax, backup singers, percussion, two keyboards, you know. To me, it was like a full-dress Harley Davidson, which you knew the engine was, you know, powerful, and it just needed stripping away, you know. And with great difficulty, we managed to lose certain members of the band, keep the rhythm section, so it became viable. It became a band that could travel. And I stayed with those guys for 3 years.
And I guess I never really thought of this, but when you listen to your spoken part of Spill the Wine, that's sort of about you trying to make it in the movies, in a way.
Well, yeah, you could see it that way. But no, actually, it was just my reflections on Mexico. I'd just gotten back from a year south of the border, and it was my homage to Mexico and its beauty and its women.
I was once out strolling one very hot summer's day when I thought I'd lay myself down to rest in a big field of tall grass. I lay there in the sun and felt it caressing my face. I fell asleep and dreamed. I dreamed I was in a Hollywood movie and that I was the star of the movie. This really blew my mind, the fact that me, an overfed, long-haired, leaping gnome, should be the star of a Hollywood movie. I was. I was taken to a place, the hall of the mountain king. I stood high upon a mountaintop, naked to the world, in front of every kind of girl. There was long ones, tall ones, short ones, brown ones, black ones, round ones, big ones, crazy ones. Whispered in my ear something crazy. She said,
Eric Burdon and War with Spill the Wine. Great to get the story behind that one. Once again, his new album is called Soul of a Man, Eric Burdon.